We're exploring Lukot HaSichas, Volume 22, the Sichud number 1 for Bahar. So I'm going to open by exploring a few different statements of our sages of Chazal that the Rebbe discusses during the Sichah and is curious about and raises questions and sort of curiosities. Why is it such? And then we'll move on to the Rebbe's explanation. So in front of you on the screen, you have a list of different sages, different statements of our sages, you know, somewhat unrelated. So let's go one by one. So there is a Zohar on this week's portion. I don't know why this is in the way here. Let's move this to the bottom. There's a Zohar on this week's portion where it says in this week's portion that on the seventh year, Vishav Sahar, it's Shabbos Lashem. On the seventh year, it's Shabbos, Shemitah. And people go free, the slaves go free on that year, on the seventh year. As it says in Parshas Mishpatim, that the Shvi'is, seventh year, the slaves go free, says the Zohar that effectively, that a Jewish slave is released on the Shemitah year. That's what the Zohar says. Just like it says by the Shemitah that the land rests, and by the Jewish slave it says that the person rests on his seventh year, he goes free. Aha, there's a connection. The land rests, the workers rest. It's much more wordy, but this is the bottom takeaway of the language of the Zohar, that every Jewish person, Bani Yisrael, Naicha B'Shemitah, he should get the rest on the Shemitah, because Naicha Da'ara, it's Tzricha Avda Naicha. When the land rests, the slaves should rest. And therefore, it should coincide. On the sabbatical year, the land rests. You know, out of work the field, the workers go home. The Shemitah, the slaves go home, which we know on the seventh year. Says the Rebbe that this is asked by many commentaries. This is completely strange, because we know the halacha is that while the land rests on the sabbatical year, the slave is not released on the sabbatical year. The slave is released on their own seventh year, whenever that was. A slave works for 6 years and goes free on the seventh, his seventh. He doesn't have to go free on the seventh year that is the communal Shemitah year. So there's really no calendar correlation between the freedom of the fields from work and the freedom of the slaves. The field is on the sabbatical year, which is a set date every seventh year. And the slaves go free on their seventh year, which is not set at all. It's only set by when they started their servitude. Very strange. I mean, the Rebbe says this is asked by many commentaries. It's a famous question. But the Rebbe is going to give a very novel answer to it. Okay. Issue/question or what have you, number two, that the Rebbe puts up, is right here related to the counting of the Omer. We're highlighting this. It says in the Torah, it's last week's portion, Usmartem lechem imachlas haShabbos, he's supposed to count from the morrow of the Shabbos, Sheva Shabbos is Tmimah, 7 complete weeks. This is introducing the concept of Sfiras HaOmer. Now we know, it's very well known, that when it says the morrow of the Shabbos, it doesn't mean Shabbos. It means Yontif. We don't start counting the Omer the day after Shabbos on a Sunday. No, we count the Omer the day after the first day of Pesach. So when it says the morrow of the Shabbos, what it really means is the morrow of the festival, which is like a Shabbos, because it has the holiness and festivals are sometimes referred to as Shabbos, but it's the morrow of the festival. So if Pesach falls out, the first day of Pesach falls out Shabbos, you start counting on Sunday. But if first day of Pesach falls out on Sunday, start counting on Monday. So, and this is a well-known thing from the Talmud and the Medrash, that the morrow of the festival does not necessarily mean Shabbos. The Sadducees, who basically heretics who did not buy into the oral tradition as holy from God, and they strictly stuck to the letter of the law of the Torah, the Bible, the written Torah, they mistakenly held that no, Sefiras HaOmer always has to start on Sunday. The verse says the morrow of the Shabbos. And in their world, Shavuos is always on a Shabbos, because the Omer starts on a Sunday and it goes for 7 weeks and ends on a Shabbos. I'm wrong. It will end on a Shabbos, so Shavuos will be Sunday. It'll be Sunday. So in the Sodasi world, the 7 weeks always starts on a Sunday and ends on a Shabbos. So Shavuos will always be on a Sunday. But that is not the truth. And the Oral Torah, which comes from Hashem, clearly tells us, this is in the Gemara, it's in the Medrash, that no, the morrow of the Shabbos does not mean what it says. It means the morrow of the festival. And the obvious question is, so why does it say it? Why doesn't it just say the morrow of the festival? It would have been a lot easier, and you would avoid the issues of the Sadducees. Says the Rebbe, there is a Medrash which says that the language, the morrow of the Shabbos, is teaching us that there's something special about when it is actually not just the morrow of the festival, but also the morrow of the Shabbos. Because the Medrash says that the language of the verse is, count for you on the morrow of the Shabbos 7 complete weeks. Says the Medrash. It says to count 7 complete weeks. And then it says to count 50 days. Says the Medrash, sometimes those weeks are complete and sometimes they're not complete. It's always going to be 50 days, 49 plus the one. But it's not necessarily complete weeks. Says the Medrash, Masai hain tamimos, when are they complete? When, essentially, the Medrash says it in a more of a roundabout way. But the bottom line is, when are they complete? When they start after Shabbos. So the Medrash is sort of giving some credence to the Sadducees' approach. That, in fact, it does say in the text, the morrow of the Shabbos. Now, we know from the Old Torah, it really means the morrow of Yontif. No matter when Pesach comes out, if it comes out Shabbos, if it comes out Sunday, it comes out Tuesday, you start counting the next day. Absolutely kosher. However, says the Medrash, it's not considered a complete 7 weeks unless the weeks are Sunday to Shabbos. So this sort of is saying that, says the Rebbe, how do we explain this? We just finished saying that we don't go along with the Sadducees. And Mar of the Shabbos does not mean Mar of Shabbos. It means the Mar of the Yontif. So the question is, why does it say Mar of the Shabbos? Now you're telling me the other side. Well, it doesn't mean the Mar of the Shabbos, but it does. Because if it's the Mar of the Shabbos, aha, the mitzvah is even more complete. So now you just confused me completely. And now you gave the Sadducees a real strong leg to stand on. That when the Torah says tomorrow of the Shabbos, it taka in fact means that. That there's an edge. When you start counting the Omer on Sunday to Shabbos, the Sadducees have a point. It's a complete counting. Really? Is it less kosher if it's from Tuesday to Monday? Of course not. That would be a Sadducees approach, which is heretics, heretical. And yet the Medrash says it. So what does it mean that it's only complete if it's Sunday to Shabbos? Otherwise, it's incomplete? The football fans here know that incomplete is not so good. If it's an incomplete, you're out. So you're telling me that if it's not from Sunday to Shabbos, it's incomplete? Only if it's Sunday to Shabbos, it's complete? That's a big problem. That's a sort of C's approach, Chas v'Shalom. And yet it says it in the Medrash. So what's going on? In fact, in Halacha, we know that when it says in the Torah 7 complete weeks, it has a different meaning. And what is it? It's more in halacha, various meanings to that phrase, 7 complete, the idea of complete. Number one is you got to count all 49 days. If you miss one day, you sort of missed it. If you miss one 24-hour period where you didn't do it, you're like done. That's one point of the completeness. So that's what that means. The other thing complete that you have to start counting at night, since the Jewish day starts in the evening. So it's 7 complete weeks. We start counting right at night. We don't count in the morning so that we get the complete 49 days, 49 full complete days. So the word complete has many meanings. Why does the Medrash throwing in this additional meaning, which seems to lean to the Sadducees? What does that mean? Again, even without the counting being from Sunday to Shabbos, without it being the morrow of the Shabbos, it's still a complete mitzvah. Is it not? Is it incomplete? Is it not accomplished? For sure it is. So why would the Medrash say that this is not complete? And what is the Torah in general doing with this whole seemingly very confusing phraseology, Morrow of the Shabbos, when it really means Morrow of the Yontif. I want to right now just give a hint to where the Rebbe is going with this, because this is really the essence of the Sicha. The Rebbe is going to introduce the concept that you can do something that's complete and it can be more complete. The choices are not only necessarily in Judaism complete and incomplete, like in football. And we have that in halacha too sometimes, lahavdil, complete and incomplete. And it's complete is good, incomplete is not good. It's not kosher, it's not valid. You didn't do the mitzvah, which is the obvious concept. But here the Rebbe is going to introduce in the Sicha that is, and this is the thrust of the Sicha, Judaism, if you look in halacha, the Rebbe gives numerous examples and types of examples. Something can be complete and it's wonderful, and then it can be more complete. And that's going to make sense of this particular issue, that even if you count the 7 weeks from whatever day they start, it's seven complete weeks. As long as you count it all 49 days and you count it from the ninth, it's complete. Ah, says the Medrash. There's a higher level of complete if it's from Sunday to Shabbos. And that's why the Torah used that language, Morrow of the Shabbos, even though it's referring to the Morrow of the Yontif. But I just jumped ahead just to give you a little smell, sniff of it. But let's get there as we get there. But that's going to be the essence of the Sicha. Complete and more complete. Okay. Another issue the Rebbe raises in the Sicha, which is a little strange, that we find that the Talmud says Shavuos, at a time when they would make the calendar based on the sightings of the moon, can be either on the 5th, 6th, or 7th day of Sivan. And the Rebbe says, how does that work? We know that Shavuos has a strong linkage to the giving of the Torah, to Matan Torah, and Matan Torah was on the 6th day of Sivan. There's a debate in the Talmud if it's the 6th or the 7th, but we go by the fact that it's by the 6th, so let's stick with that for the argument. So if the Matan Torah was in the 6th of Sivan, how could Shavuos come either the 5th, 6th, or 7th? Now, even though if you look into the Torah itself, nowhere in the Torah does it say Shavuos is the day of the giving of the Torah. Shavuos in the Torah is the holiday of the counting of 50 days from Pesach. However, we know in Chazal, in our sages, and in the Gemara Yerushalmi, it's very explicit that these two are really connected. And in fact, those 49 days are not just random. They're counting from Pesach because the Jews were counting down. Even though now it's connected and linked to something seemingly different, that we're counting from the day after the bringing of the Omer offering. But it's really one and the same. The Jews were counting down or counting up, as it were, to receive the Torah. So the 7 weeks and culminating in Shavuos is clearly related in many classic Jewish sources with Shavuos and with the giving of the Torah. In fact, in our prayers, we call Shavuos Zeman Matan Torah Teinu. So how could it be that Shavuos can be on the 5th, 6th, or 7th when the giving of the Torah was on the 6th? This is only true, by the way, parenthetically, when they did the moon by the sightings of the witnesses. And we wouldn't know if a month would have 29, 30 days until the day of. So the way it would work is that if the months of Nisan and Iyar were both 29 days, which could happen if you go by the sightings, so then Shavuos would be on the 5th day of Sivan. If the month of Nisan and Iyar both have 30 days, which could happen if you go by the sightings, then Shavuos would land out. I just said it backwards, I'm sorry. If the month of Nisan and Iyar had 29 days, so Shavuos, if Nisan and Iyar have 29 days, so Shavuos would be on the 7th of Sivan. If Nisan and Iyar have 30 days, Shavuos will be on the 5th of Sivan. And according to our calendar, which now has it established that Nisan has 30 days and Iyar has 29, so we split the difference, Shavuos will always come out on the 6th of Sivan. So today we don't have this issue. But nevertheless, says the Rebbe, what's the point of this? How is this allowable? We don't have any other holiday which commemorates an anniversary of an event. And it could be on that day and it could not be on that day. How does that make sense? I'm not saying Shavuos doesn't have other themes, but a big theme of Shavuos is the giving of the Torah. It should align. Another interesting thing, which is a little curious, or great, very curious, that the Rebbe brings, we find the Mishnah discussing the temple service. And the Mishnah speaks about those who were temple officials in charge of various things in the temple. There were all kinds of things, jobs that were given out to the various families of the Kohens. And also there were officials in charge of different departments. And the Mishnah gives a list of all of the names of the people in charge of these departments. As an example, Yochanan ben Pinchas, he's in charge of the tokens. These were like little stamps, tokens that you would give if you would buy these tokens that you're going to get an offering, a Thanksgiving offering, a sin offering, or that offering, and then you go cash it in to get the actual animal. So there was a guy named Yochanan ben Pinchas in charge of the tokens. And there's a whole list in the Mishnah of other names of people that were in charge of different things. People in charge of the wood for the temple, people in charge of the animals for the temple, people in charge of the oil, people in charge of the incense, people in charge, the person in charge of the lottery for the various Kohens, etc., 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 the Kohen garments. There were people in charge of every department, department heads, temple officials. And the Mishnah lists all their names. And the obvious question or the curiosity is why, and the commentaries ask this question, why does it have to say the names? Like what's the point? And the commentaries give different answers. Clearly, this is the name, the Rebbe goes with the Bartanura's approach, that these are the names of the officials on the first year of the temple service. First year when temple service began, I guess, in earnest, these were the names. So the Mishnah tells us, but why is the Mishnah telling us? The Mishnah is not a history book, it's a halachic book. And in halacha, ma'ida hava hava, the Rebbe says, the language of the Talmud, whatever was, was. Who cares? Do I need to know who was the original people who did those official duties? That's history. We've moved on. Every generation is different people. The Bartanura starts to say that each generation, they would refer to them with that name, even though they didn't have the same name. They would refer to them with the original names of those who held those posts the first time around. What's that all about? It's ancient history. So these are the curiosities that Rebbe poses. Essentially, we have four curiosities. Just to briefly recap it, number one is, what's the concept that the Zohar is telling us? That a slave is released on Shemitah when the fields are released. This is really two separate counts. The Shemitah is a set sabbatical year for all the Jewish people, whereas the slave goes out on his seventh year, whenever that was. The second thing we discuss, what's the whole issue of the counting of the Omer? The Torah refers to it as the morrow of the Shabbos when it's really the morrow of the Yontif. Why would it use a term that's misleading? And what does it mean that the Medrash says, well, if it's on the morrow of the Shabbos, it is more complete? See the complete, or it's not complete. What's this complete? The third curiosity was, how can Shavuos, which is clearly related to the giving of the Torah, come out on one of three different days? Not necessarily the day of the giving of the Torah. What is that all about? And finally, why do we have the temple officials listed by name, the list of the original officials when it first started? Why do I need to know that in Jewish law? How is that relevant? Okay, let's minimize that window. And let's explore the theme. Remember, I said before, what is the theme? The theme is going to be different levels of completeness in halach. So, the Rebbe says, let's explore. This is a fascinating discussion. What's called in halacha lechatchila and b'diyeved. We say often that you know, if there's a behavior, a mitzvah that you're supposed to accomplish, there's lechatchila, the ideal way of doing it, and there's the b'diyeved, acceptable way of doing it. You know, a practical idea that comes to mind, you know, you're supposed to daven every day, shacharis. So there's a zman tefillah. There's a time when you're supposed to daven before a certain, a couple of hours into the day. But then, if you daven shacharis before noon, it's acceptable. You still did your prayer. So that's called lechatchila and b'diyeved, the ideal time for the mitzvah, or the ideal behavior, and the acceptable behavior. And this is very, very common. You open up the Code of Jewish Law, and the abridged revision Code of Jewish Law, very often will say, try to do this, but if not, this is also okay. After the fact, that's what b'diyeved means. The literal translation of l'chatchila means l'chatchila, at the beginning, and b'diyeved means once it's done. But this is a very common concept in halach. So let's walk through this, okay? The Rebbe says that generally speaking, the The CW, the conventional wisdom would be that the concept of the chatchila b'diavad, the ideal way or acceptable way of doing the same mitzvah, applies only in rabbinic mitzvahs, not in biblical. Because in biblical, it's either good or it's not good. So let's take an example of a biblical mitzvah. I'm using for A, B, and C here, for the first, I'm using the example of the mitzvah of tzitzis. If I have a pair of tzitzis and it's missing one of the four strings. So you can't say that, you know, ideally it should have four, but it doesn't have four, it's got three. No, if it doesn't have three, it's no good. If it doesn't have the ideal, it's not compliant. And after the fact, it's not compliant. It's no good. There's only one way to do tzitzis. You got to have four strings. There is no better or worse or acceptable because it's a biblical mitzvah. This is the sort of the CW before you think it through, that you would think that have these two levels of acceptable behavior is not applicable with a biblical mitzvah, because in a biblical mitzvah it either is or not. It's biblical. When it's a rabbinic example, I said before, for example, the guy is davening with, you know, at the time of prayer, or he's davening to the last deadline. It's a rabbinic thing, and the sages gave an allowance. And the allowance is, this is the ideal and this is the acceptable. But if the Torah says to do it, well, what's the allowance? This is the CW. The Rebbe is not going to remain with this, but this is the CW. Whereas in rabbinic, there are many, many examples of rabbinic mitzvahs that ideally you should do it one way, but if you didn't, it's okay too. And here's an example. I'm just sticking with the tzitzis. You put on your tzitzis, but you didn't make a bracha. You're supposed to make a bracha, but what happened if you didn't? So you could say that you are, if you make the bracha, you're compliant. If you're not making the bracha, you're not compliant, but it's still acceptable. Because the bracha is a rabbinic law. The bracha is a rabbinic law. This is true with any mitzvah. I use tzitzis as an example, but brachas of all mitzvahs are rabbinic. The same thing could be with, you know, with your tefillin and with the shofar and any mitzvah. You did the mitzvah. You just didn't do the rabbinic piece. And therefore, when it comes to the rabbinic piece, it's not as binding, let's call it, as the biblical mitzvah. And no one could say you didn't do the mitzvah because you did. So this is the conventional wisdom, that what is the concept of lechatchila b'diavad, the ideal way of doing the mitzvah, and the acceptable way? That I did the biblical, but I didn't do rabbinic. Or within rabbinic examples itself, as I said before, with prayer. And therefore, and let's use this example, I put the tzitzis, but I didn't make the bracha. I'm compliant. Again, if I made the bracha, I'm fully compliant. If I didn't make the bracha, you could say I'm not compliant. I didn't do the right thing, but it's still acceptable because I did the mitzvah. Says the Rebbe, though, that it's clear. You look in halacha, you'll find many, many examples that even in biblical, here's where it gets interesting, even in biblical mitzvahs, which the Torah says to do it, we're still going to find two levels. It's the ideal way is this, but even if you didn't do it, it's still acceptable. And the example I'm giving, because I want to stick with the tzitzis, just to make it easy to follow, these are all my examples. There's a concept in halacha that ideally tzitzis should be made out of wool. And this is sourced in the Torah itself. The tzitzis should be made out of wool. There are various opinions, but still, I think it's a good example. So since tzitzis should be made out of wool, if you're wearing the wool and tzitzis, it's a complete mitzvah. If you're not, let's argue, it's not a complete mitzvah. It's lacking, but it's still acceptable. So this here, we see that in a biblical mitzvah itself, there's two ways to do it, even though one is better than the other. Okay. What we accomplished so far, that the Rebbe is introducing, this is not an innovation of the Rebbe, the Rebbe is just walking us through this. The Rebbe is introducing the concept that that this idea of ideal and less than ideal, or let's call it two levels of doing the mitzvah, exists not only in rabbinic, but also in the biblical mitzvah itself. Okay. However, now the Rebbe is going to take us away, take us much further and stretch this concept. And the Rebbe is going to say, you see, so far we're talking about the fact that the person who did the mitzvah was less than diligent and did not do their utmost and still was saying it's still acceptable. But there's something missing. The guy did the tzitzis, but he didn't make the bracha. Or he didn't use the woolen tzitzis to those opinions that hold that it's not complete. So you could say the person did something wrong. Whether on purpose or not, it doesn't matter. The person was lacking in their behavior. This mitzvah behavior is missing. However, we still accept it. So this is a way to understand the concept of ideal versus acceptable. Namely, the person dropped the ball. It's still okay. Says the Rebbe, I'm going to introduce now a whole new conversation. And if you look in Judaism, you will find a good and better, complete and more complete, if you will, and the one dropped the ball. What's the example? The Yom Tov observance of the holidays. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, the way they are in temple days and the way they are nowadays. The Torah says he's supposed to observe the holidays. It's a biblical mitzvah. He's supposed to have simcha. It's a mitzvah. Mitzvah min ha-Torah. Biblical mitzvah. Very important holidays. However, one understands there's a total different observance today versus temple days. Temple days, everyone brought their offering. Shalmei simcha. The peace offerings of joy and olas re'iyah. The mitzvah, the offerings that they brought to because they were coming for the pilgrimage. And the mitzvah itself of doing the pilgrimage. Cannot forget about it. On top of that, all the things that we do today. Today, what are we left with? We have meat, we have wine, you know, we have simcha, but we're missing out on the whole pilgrimage and the offerings. You can't compare the two. And yet, when I do the mitzvah today of Sukkot before Mashiach comes, may it be speedily today, but if I do the mitzvah of the holiday before Mashiach comes and I didn't bring the sacrifice, and I didn't go up to the pilgrimage in the Holy Temple, I still did the mitzvah. I did it fully. You can't say I dropped the ball. In A and B, where what was the example of ideal versus acceptable? The person, it's on the guy. He dropped the ball. We can understand what it means, ideal and less than ideal. Because human beings will be human beings. They're not perfect. So if you do it ideally, I'm a chayah. If you don't, it's still okay. So here we can understand, we can entertain the concept of two levels of Jewish observance. You're going to say, what do you mean? Which is the real truth? The real truth is A, but if you do B, your human beings are not always going to be perfect. Comes along that Eben says, if you explore a little further, you'll find in Torah instances where there is ideal and more ideal, and it has nothing to do with the person dropping the ball. When I'm observing Yontif nowadays, I'm not bringing sacrifices, and nor should I. I'm doing it to the utmost that I possibly could. There's no ball dropping going on. It's not about the poison. It's about the actual mitzvah. The mitzvah, the way it's defined now, is different the way it's defined in temple days. And there's nothing you can do about it except cry, we want Mashiach now. But for now, we have these two levels of observances. And that's why when it comes to the observance nowadays, I'm not calling it not complete. You can't say it's not complete. It's complete. Except I use the word compliant. I'm not going to say complete because something's missing. We even say it in our Musaf on Yantif, V'sham nasa kemitzah lefanecha kemitzah tzitzonecha. Then we'll do the mitzvah fully. So I'm not even going to call it complete. But you see, the difference is a little different. In A and B, there was compliant versus acceptable. That's very different. Compliant or complete versus non-compliant or non-complete, but still acceptable. When we're talking about the holidays of the way we observe Yom Tov today and we observe Yom Tov in the temple days, nowadays I can't call it complete, even though it's completely compliant. Not acceptable, it's compliant. Temple days is complete. So the Rebbe is sort of walking us through to graduate the thinking that the levels of Jewish observance is only because you dropped the ball. There could be real levels built into the system irrespective of me making a mistake, irrespective of the humans involved, that provide for two levels of observance, as we see. And then the Rebbe takes it even further. Whoops. And the Rebbe says, so far we said in C, yes, it's irrespective of the person, but it's respective of the circumstance, namely, Bizman Azeh nowadays, and Bizman Beis HaMikdash temple days. Says the Rebbe, if you look, you will find even nowadays, all the time, two different parts of the same mitzvah, two different applications of the same mitzvah, and they are totally different, namely, the Yontif and Chol HaMoed. The Yontif has a holiness, and the Torah calls it Mikra Kodesh, etc. Moed, special times. But here, clearly, we understand the intensity of the observance of the Yontif versus the intensity of the observance of Chol HaMoed. You can't compare it. It's holy. It's Chol HaMoed. Therefore, it's part of the Moed, but it's Chol HaMoed. So the Rebbe says it's the same mitzvah. It's not another mitzvah to observe Chol HaMoed. It's the mitzvah of observing the Moed, the festival of Sukkot or of Pesach. But within that itself, there is the way it's observed in the Yontif days and the way it's observed in the Chol HaMoed days. So here you have, what are you going to do with this? So you have two levels of holiness and two levels of observance within the same mitzvah. And not because someone dropped the ball, and not even because now versus temple days. It's now versus now. See, you can't say compliant versus complete. It's complete and more complete. Some of this is my own language, but this is already clear in the Sikh. This is the point the Rebbe is trying to take us to. When I say I observe Chol HaMoed with not the same level of simcha or whatever, of holiness that I observed the Yontif, you can't say that I was just compliant. I was complete. That was a complete Chol HaMoed, and a Yontif, it's a different complete. So you can almost call it complete and more complete, if you will, which is built into the Torah itself. So the Rebbe is sort of taking us into a new way of thinking about this concept of lechatchil and b'diyeved, and how Torah has levels upon levels, not just imperfection to perfection, or no good to good to better. There's better to best. And sometimes beyond even the choice of the person, the mitzvah itself contains the various levels of perfection, intrinsic, built into the system. It's not up to you. And it's not even up to the circumstances. It's just the levels that are constant, built into the system. And then the Rebbe says, to my thinking, this is the same idea. This E is the same as D. However, here it is not in one mitzvah. Like Yontif Chol HaMoed is the same mitzvah, but it's actually different mitzvahs that have the same theme, and we see various differences between them. An example the Rebbe gives is the mitzvah of remembering Exodus. We have that mitzvah every day, and we have that mitzvah at the Seder night. It's not the same mitzvah. It's different mitzvahs in the Torah. But obviously they have the same theme. And we find that obviously their observance is very, very different. There are many halachic differences. Every day we have to remember it. We don't even have to recite it. Verbally, Pesach, we do. Furthermore, every day we just have to remember it briefly. On Pesach, it has to be with a question-answer situation with our children, and it has to be related to the story. So here we have, again, even similar, but yet different. Now we have two levels of completion. Again, here I'm two. I'm calling it complete and more complete. If I remember Exodus every single day, because I say Laman Tiskor, that one line at the end of the Davening, or I say it in the Shema, I've done the mitzvah. I don't have the mitzvah of asking the four questions and putting down a Seder plate unless my mitzvah is not complete. No, it's completely complete. I remember Exodus on this day. And yet when Pesach comes and I have the mitzvah, a very similar mitzvah of remembering Exodus, and here it's a whole thing. It takes hours. So obviously, again, the concept of complete and more complete, and the Rebbe is in great detail introducing and proving that this is the case. Now that we have this concept, the main focus now should be on D and E, because that's what we're going to use to answer our earlier questions, to my thinking, A, B, and C was just the Rebbe in the Sicha taking us step by step to introduce to us D and E, which mean two levels of doing a mitzvah, either the same mitzvah, D, or E, two mitzvahs which carry the same theme. And in both cases, we have two levels. And not one is acceptable versus not acceptable, versus complete. No, not even compliant versus complete. Complete versus more complete. Once we have that, we're going to be able to answer our questions. The Rebbe says, let's go back to the questions. No. I'm going to start with the last thing on the Mishnah. The Rebbe said, this is not a case of a mitzvah. It's just an interesting teaching about Judaism. And that is, why would the Mishnah tell us the names of the officials in the temple? As we said before, these were the names of the officials in the first go-round. Why do we need to know what happened? And it's brought down in commentary from the Bar Tanura that every subsequent generation, they would nickname the people who had those jobs with those original names, even though it wasn't their real name. Says the Rebbe, there's a purpose to this whole discussion, because this would sort of line up with D, that you could have one mitzvah, one observance, but it could have its perfection and its less than perfection. The Rebbe is saying that the reason why Yochanan ben Pinchas was over the tokens, a name says something about the person. We know from Rab Meir's teachings that he would look into a person's name and derive lessons about the person's soul. So those original names, including Yochanan ben Pinchas, but all the different jobs, those names reflected the soul of the person, that they were suitable for those jobs on the highest level. And that's why they were the first ones. They were the first generation of temple officers, and they fit the job perfectly. In future generations, maybe they fit the job, but maybe not as perfect. So we sort of nickname them the same name to make the point that the fact that they got the job indicates they probably have some similarities to the original people, but maybe they're not exactly on that level. You know, we all know the name Nachshon ben Aminadav, right? The one who was the first one to jump into the Yam Suf when it's split. Sometimes you have a person who takes initiative and does something difficult, we nickname him a Nachshon. People will say, he's a Nachshon. Now, his name is not Nachshon, but we call him a Nachshon because he's following that approach. If his name was actually Nachshon, maybe it would be an indication that he's more of a Nachshon because it's actually his name. Similarly here, says the Rebbe, we're making sense of that Mishnah of the officers. And why does it say their names? Again, this would be the complete and more complete. This would fit into D. The sages of the original one had these names, and those names spelled out their personalities and their souls, and they fit the jobs. They were like the highest level for those jobs. Future generations, they're okay for the job. But if they didn't have the same name, they're complete, but it's not as complete. And the Mishnah is making that point that there is perfection and beyond perfection, and that the first generation, their names matched perfectly. They really had the personalities. This is not a halacha thing or a mitzvah thing. This is sort of a narrative teaching this thing. Based on that, the Rebbe borrows further. So now let's apply this to the counting of the Omer, which is really one of the main thrusts of the Sicha. And we understand that the counting of the Omer can be the morrow of the festival. It can start from any day of the week and end any day of the week. It doesn't have to be Sunday to Shabbos. But by the fact that the Torah uses the word Machlas HaShabbos, the morrow of the Shabbos, it is trying to teach us something. And we know from the Medrash, what is it teaching us? That there's a greater completion in the counting if it starts from Sunday to Shabbos, if it's actually the morrow of the Shabbos. And we say, what do you mean? What do you mean it's more complete? And if it's from Tuesday to Monday, it's not complete. It's got to be complete. Otherwise, you didn't do the mitzvah. Of course it's complete. Says the Rebbe, there's complete and there's more complete. And that's what the whole Sikh accomplished for us. And therefore, this section would fit in clearly also in D. What is D? Different levels within one mitzvah. Just like we have Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed. We have the counting of the Omer on the perfect on the most complete way, which would be if it starts on Sunday. And then we have the counting of the Omer on most years, which is also complete. You can't do any better. You're doing the best you could. Pesach started on Tuesday. On Tuesday, you start counting the next day. It's complete. However, in circumstances which are not up to us, when Pesach starts on Shabbos and the counting starts on Sunday, this is the ultimate complete way of doing the mitzvah, and therefore the Torah chooses that verbiage because the Torah wants to introduce to us the mitzvah of the highest level. Similar to the way the Mishnah, Torah Shebaal Peh, behaves, that it gives us the names of those officers and those officials, even though it's not really relevant, to teach us what the ideal is in concept. And then this could also be borrowed to the Gemara, to the conversation of Shavuos falling on these 3 days. And the Rebbe said, how could that be? How could that be? How could Shavuos fall on days that is not the giving of the Torah? And the answer is, of course, Shavuos has other themes as well, but the main theme of Shavuos is the countdown to the giving of the Torah. It's all true. However, it doesn't always come out exactly on the giving of the Torah. And when it does, that's a greater completion in I guess, Shavuos. Shavuos can come out the 5th or the 6th or the 7th. All of them are complete. All of them is okay. All of them is acceptable in Torah. Not just acceptable, but complete. You can't do better. It's not like you drop the ball if it's on the 5th or on the 7th. It is what it is, and it's okay. However, when it comes out on the day of the giving it a Torah, on the 6th, this is the complete mitzvah. This too would fit in to D. Then this Zohar, which is how the Sicha begins and ends, this the Rebbe relates, I'm having a hard time highlighting it, but this Zohar the Rebbe relates to E. The Zohar, which is so curious. The Zohar seems to indicate that a Jewish slave is released, and his release on his 7th year is related to the release of the lands for all Jewish people on the Shemitah year. And it's seemingly just not correct. The release of a slave is on his 7th year, not on the Shemitah year. In fact, it's two different mitzvahs. That's why the Rebbe introduced E, that you have two mitzvahs that have the same theme, but the two mitzvahs. What was E? The remembering of Exodus on Pesach night and every day. It's two mitzvahs in the Torah. Even though they have the same theme, but one is more complete, one is less complete. And that helps us understand this Zohar. The mitzvah of the Jewish slave being released is a mitzvah. The mitzvah of the lands being released on Shemitah is a separate mitzvah. And the two are not related. Your 7th year is not related to Shemitah. It's your 7th year, whenever that was. However, when your 7th year lines up with the Shemitah, aha, now you have an even more complete personal freedom. The Rebbe is saying that the Zohar is giving us a depth here. There's a theme. There's a theme, even though they're unrelated. Why does the slave go free? Because God's in charge, and a Jew can never be a slave. Why does the land go free every Shemitah? Because God's in charge, and the blessings come from Hashem, and therefore the land should be left alone to show your faith, etc. So the common theme is that there's an Eibishter who's in charge, he's running the show. It's not up to you, and therefore everything reverts back. It's total freedom. There's no boss except for Hashem. And therefore, ultimately, when the slave goes free on his own, it's because of the same reason. And when does he go free? On the 7th year from his service. But if his 7th year coincides with the Shemitah, it's a much bigger proclamation that God's in charge, because the whole world is shouting God is in charge. And therefore, it becomes highlighted, and this complete concept becomes even more complete. So I don't feel the need to go through the motions here, but ultimately, these three would be lined up. I'm going to do it just for the fun of it in case it helps somebody. Let's see. I'm going to line them up and then we'll just quickly recap it. Okay, so now I put everything sort of in its box. We have the concept of the what was the that we have on in the same mitzvah, different levels of completeness, namely Yontif versus Chol HaMoed, and that works with the concept of the temple officers. They have the original names, it's even more complete, even though if they have other names, it's obviously fine. That same theme works with the concept of Shavuos, whether it falls out on the giving of the Torah or not, it's still fine. But nevertheless, if it falls out on the actual giving of the Torah, that's even more complete. And then, of course, Svirasa Omer, if it starts on a Sunday, it's complete. But if it starts on a Sunday, it's even more complete. And then the concept of this slavery, so again, if you go out on the seventh year and it's your own seventh year, it's complete. That's the way the mitzvah should be done. But if it happens to be the Shemitah year of the entire Jewish nation, it's even more complete. What's a takeaway from the Sikha? The Rebbe doesn't give it in the Sikha. I suggest a takeaway. And that is that in listening to the Rebbe over the years, you hear a lot the concept that the Rebbe always likes, the idea of growth within Kedusha itself. Like what will be when Mashiach comes, right? The question is asked. Until then, we're struggling to overcome negativity. What will be when Mashiach comes? The language is that it's going to be Hisafa V'Aliyah in Kedusha itself, adding and increasing in Kedusha itself, because a big theme in Judaism, which the Rebbe loved to talk about and highlight, that Hashem is infinite and Torah is infinite, and therefore we will keep going over and up more and more and more. There's never an end. Even when the world is good and there's no struggle, doesn't have to be about overcoming struggle. It could be an increase in Kedusha itself, which is why the Rebbe always said to increase in Torah study, and more person should take on more Torah study. You're doing the mitzvah right, do it with more behidur. Rebbe encouraged hidur mitzvah a lot. Do the mitzvah precision, and even more precision. Why? Because we're dealing with Hashem. Hashem is infinite. And this becomes, I think, a big takeaway from this sikha, and I think the Rebbe has a big passion in this, that we should be in love with Hashem and love with Yiddishkeit, and it's endless, and always look to grow. And therefore, the Rebbe presents an entire essay here, bringing home this idea that the Torah presents these mitzvahs in their ultimate completion, even though they're completely acceptable, and really, most times you can't even do them better in their plain completion, because the Rebbe wants completion and beyond completion and even beyond, which is a theme of Haysafa, of constant increase in Kedusha. Another simple lesson, plain lesson, which comes from the end of the Sikh, that the freedom of the slave, personal redemption, is related in its perfect completion to the communal redemption. When it's not just your seventh year, but it's the Shemitah year, then your own redemption is perfect. This is a theme that the Rebbe spoke about a lot, especially in the later years, that we shouldn't be afraid of Mashiach, because Geula means Goyla with the Aleph, which means everything stays the same. You still have, the Rebbe said clearly, you still have your connections and your business and everything else, except you'll add the element of Hashem. So therefore, when a person is looking for the personal redemption, you know, when you're davening for your own tzaddis and your own challenges, the best thing is to daven for Mashiach, meaning you have the Shemitah, you have the sabbatical for all of Klal Yisrael, all of the world, and everything else obviously will come along with it and be in a much more complete way.